when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello, everybody. It's episode 33 of Prepping 2.0. This is a really good show, really important topic, why preppers need gold and silver, with Joe Jaquint, who is the guy when it comes to preppers needing gold and silver. I can explain why. We're excited to have him. He's joining us from Phoenix. Shelby, we always like to do the top 100 things that go the fastest in a collapse or a crisis. Item number 23 is very timely. Go ahead. And what is item number 23? Because you would have never thought of this had we not said anything.
Number 23, and just to remind folks, you can go to our website, prepping2-0, and see the full list. Number 23 is cough drops. Now, why is that kind of serendipitously funny? Is because if you listen to last week's show, and even parts of this week's show, I'm going to predict it, you are getting over the most craziest, weird bronchitis infection, weird coughing thing. So cough drops have been, cough medicine, cough anything has been very present in our life this week. So number 23, cough drops. You're going to need them, I guarantee you, because if we need them this week in pristine times, you're going to need them. So if you can stock up on them, best time to coupon for those and find those are between about September, November, because that's when all the kids go back to school and get sick. Stock them up. They don't go bad. Seal them up. Keep a bunch of them. There you go.
Well, here's a crazy thought. I was thinking about this morning, as a matter of fact. I was organizing some gear on my kit. And I realized, and I was coughing, of course. By the way, I have a cough button, a little mute button, which is going to save our show today. And I thought about it when I was thinking about the kit and everything. And I thought, if I'm having to walk through the woods and sneak up on somebody and you hear me coughing, I know that sounds sort of silly, but I mean, it's a problem. And obviously your comfort and all of that, and coughing can really keep people up at night, which is a problem. So it's one of these things, oh, that's just a little comfort thing. No, not really. And I would add to cough drops, I don't know what it's called, but it's basically anti-mucus stuff, because in the third world, when people go there and try to help people that have all kinds of nasty communicable diseases that happen when there's no treated water and those sorts of things, one of the things that the relief workers always come back and say, and I listen to those people because they've actually seen what I think is coming, and they'll always say, yeah, anti-mucus stuff, because people will get so congested that they'll cough and they won't sleep, and then their ribs hurt, and it's one of those things they say over and over, you would have never thought this would be a big deal, comma, and I put that in the same category with cough drops because it gets the same thing. So that's one of the reasons, hopefully you guys listen to our show, is that whole thing where you go, oh, never really thought of that. And of course, the cool thing is cough drops and anti-mucus pills, I believe they are, or liquids, really, really cheap right now. Go to Costco, very, very inexpensive, store forever, and you and your family, or maybe neighbors if you want to help them, are going to be way better off if there's badness in the drinking water. So that's what we're all about, you know, the practical stuff. Cheap, easy to do now. Don't freak out. Don't go into debt. Don't break a bunch of gun laws, getting a bunch of illegal guns. Don't do dumb stuff. Just common sense stuff. Just grab it at Costco. So that's what number 23 is. Well, I think it's time to look at what's in the merch shack.
What's in the merch shack?
What's in the merch shack this week? It's really just what's going on with the merch shack. I would say right now we are working on, and I'm hoping by the time everyone hears this, it's all updated. It may or may not be, but I encourage people to go to our merch shack, go to 299days.com or agreatstate.com and click on shop. You can find patiently awaiting the collapse stickers. Those are en route. As soon as we get them, they'll be sent out. We have a whole new updated in our t-shirts, I Miss America t-shirts, whole new slew of sizes coming in. So keep checking back on that. And we still have AR mags, our I Miss America AR mags. So we have a lot going on in the merch shack.
We sure do. Well, now, I think what everyone's been waiting for, Joe Jaquint, Patriot Radio News Hour, and more importantly, the Patriot Trading Group. Here's some backstory on Joe, and this is kind of a personal connection. And so back in 2009, we always talk about 2009 as a time when it was kind of like prepping 1.0. You know, it was like we were all kind of starting and feeling our way through this and doing the kind of the rookie stuff, right? The very beginning stuff. And I remember in 2009 distinctly, I got on my computer on iTunes because I wanted to hear podcasts from a Patriot perspective. So what did I do? I typed the word Patriot into the iTunes search engine, right? And up came something called the Patriot Radio News Hour. And I thought, well, that's exactly what I'm looking for. But I'm going to listen because these guys could be wackos for all I know. I mean, they could be talking crazy stuff and I don't need that. And I listened and I listened and I couldn't stop listening. And so for 10 years, and I've taken some breaks, there's been some on and off time if I'm busy or whatever, I've been listening to Joe and his uncle, Eric Cederstrom, who is retired and no longer on the show. I listened to Joe on the Patriot Radio News Hour, and I fell in love with the show and the company. We'll talk about that more in a while. But the reason I bring that up is prepping 2.0 is kind of that second level. So here we are in 2019. We've gone from prepping 1.0, which is listening to Joe on the radio, to prepping 2.0, which is having him on our show. I just think that's a really cool kind of evolution of that. So, Shelby, what's a question people always ask us, like all the time?
Oh, yeah, probably about once a week we get the, who do you recommend to buy gold and silver from? Who do you recommend? Because that's kind of a big purchase. That's like a big deal. So here we are. Here's the answer to your question. Listen in today and you'll hear who we recommend.
Yeah, and I want to emphasize that there are a lot of snakes in this gold and silver and precious metal business. And Joe has too much class to talk about other people in this business in a negative way. So I'll go ahead and talk negatively about them. There are all those ads on Fox News, you know, get your free gold report and we'll give you $2,000 in gold. Well, that doesn't make any sense to me. That's never going to happen. And what is the truth about that is you give them your phone number and or your email address and or both, and guess what? For the next 1,000 years, you've got some cold call guys who are getting paid on commission in some boiler room calling you, telling you you need to buy gold and silver. And it's a horrible thing. It's not happened to me. It's happened to people I know. I mean, it's to the point where you're sitting there thinking, maybe I need to change my phone number. You know what I mean? It's that bad. And they hound you, and they do bait and switch, and they do bad stuff. And they give the gold and silver business a bad rap. And so another problem with the snakes in the grass in this business, again, I've spoken with Joe about this privately, and he had too much class to even mention this other company. I will, because I can. There was a company called, notice past tense, there was a company called Northwest Territorial Mint, and it was in the Seattle area, and it was on I-5, and I would drive by it every day when I went to work, and I felt really guilty. I would listen to Joe's show, and I thought, well, I should get my gold and silver from Joe. You know, he's giving me all this great information. And I'd drive by Northwest Territorial Mint and I'd say, well, I'm going to go look at their prices, right? I felt like a dirty, awful person. And one day I drive by and the place is closed. The reason it's closed is they were taking people's money. They were not fulfilling orders. And then they closed. And now there's, you know, a bunch of class action lawsuits. I think the guy went to jail. Don't know. Don't care. There's a lot of snakes in this business. And the thing I love about Joe is 30 years plus, Better Business Bureau, zero complaints. You can't do that. I mean, if you're one of these other companies. And also, he's been on the air along with his uncle 23 years doing a radio show, KXXT in Phoenix and now KHNC in Colorado. We're on that station and we love it. We absolutely love it. And his podcast, Patriot Radio News Hour, is huge, huge download numbers. Lots and lots of people listen to it. And, you know, so I would like to bring Joe on and ask him to introduce himself and say hi to all our listeners.
Well, Glenn and Shelby, thank you so much. Super excited to be here. Love what you two do. Got both of your books, by the way. Thank you very much. I decided I was going to start with the one that was probably the worst of the two. So, Glenn, I've started with your book. Shelby, I'm saving the better of the two for the final read. But I'm just happy to be here. I appreciate the introduction. And if nothing else, you know, one of the things that I love about your show is the information. You know, you talked about cough drops today and things that just are common sense things that everybody can do to be is prepared for some very, you know, simple things without it costing a fortune, but information. And that's what we deliver. I think the most important thing that we do on our show is we try to educate everybody so they can understand what is really happening to them financially. We try to, you know, spiritually, you can get that somewhere else. We primarily deal with your financial well-being, and we just try to educate you. And at the end of the day, we hope that you do business with us. And that's really it. I mean, it's just that simple. We don't, I don't have a sales force, if you will. We don't make any outbound phone calls. If you call us and place an order, or if you call us just to ask questions, you'll never hear back from us unless you call us again.
Yeah, that's a relief. And by the way, I want everyone to know up front, I'll ask Joe this question. Joe, are you paying us a bunch of money to say that you're our gold and silver company? Do we have any kind of financial deal whatsoever?
None whatsoever. None whatsoever. I think this is something, too, that about us and about how we feel about what we do. We know and understand, and we've been doing this a very, very long time, that you need to have your entire house in order. Like I said previously, I deal with your financial house, but you have to have the entire house in order. And it was one of those things where like Len said, we've been on the air 23 years. The station up in Colorado, the owners, the husband passed away. The wife is you know, getting ready to be retired. She's in her mid-70s, and we ended up buying that radio station about 6 months ago, and we've been filling up our whole program is built around getting people educated and really trying to build the entire house, and it just made a lot of sense for us to partner together. What you and Shelby do is so important, and it's something where when you reach out to me and we started talking, it just seemed like a great fit. And this isn't a financial thing for Glenn or Shelby. It's not a financial thing for me. This is just people coming together that really get it and understand, hey, you know, we need to help people just be prepared for whatever it may be. And I think this is it's just been great so far. I'm just so I feel so blessed to have found you and Shelby and what you've added to all of my customers. It's just fantastic. And hopefully I can do the same for some of your customers.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I'm going to ask the big question that is on everybody's mind, which is why preppers should have some gold and silver. And Joe, you do at least an hour radio show every day and sometimes more than that. So you've got plenty of time here on this show to give a long-winded and complete answer, because I really want people to understand all the dots that you connect and why this is something they need to do. And I'll say this at the outset, your education that you gave me starting 10 years ago on the Federal Reserve and the national debt heavily influenced the 299 Days book series, because in my books, I talk about as the background for why the economy fell apart in the future. I mentioned, you know, I talked a lot about the Federal Reserve and the debt, you know, consumer debt, the national debt, and you influenced the book. So I want people to know that this isn't just like, hey, we need a guest this morning. I mean, you influence the book. So you have the floor, my friend, for the rest of this show, if that's what it takes, to let people know the story about why they need gold and silver.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll try to be as simple as possible with all of this. We can start with our founding fathers, you know, really, and that's probably where you need to start when they were putting this country together and they were writing the Constitution. and they were trying to create a country that was an improvement, if you will, from the countries that they were from. And one of the things that, especially if you ever read the Federalist Papers, which I don't recommend anybody does, it's the most boring thousands and thousands and thousands of pages of writing. And, you know, and it's written in the old, what I'll call the old English. So it's super hard to even get through. But when it came to finances, our founding fathers, you know, they understood the dangers of allowing the bankers to have the power. So they wanted the money to be gold and silver. In other words, you can't just make it up out of thin air, right? Somebody's going to have to go there. Someone's going to have to mine it out of the ground, you know, put the labor into it. And you only could have as much as you could get your hands on. And there was great reasons for that, because they had seen when you put the money in the control of the bankers, what happens, right? And what happens is all the wealth, it always ends the same. The wealth ends up in the hands of very few. And when you talk about fiat money, which is what we have today, we have what I like to call paper with pretty colors on it, that they call the Federal Reserve Note. But all fiat money goes to zero. Matter of fact, the first people to create fiat money, and it's kind of funny and ironic when we talk about where we're at today, was the Chinese.
Hundreds of years ago.
Yes, hundreds and hundreds of years ago in the Ming Dynasty. They were the first ones. And all of these guys, you think about today, Jay Powell, some of you may know that name, some of you may not. He's the head of the Federal Reserve. He's kind of like the head banker of the country. Most of you may know the name like Alan Greenspan or Ben Bernanke, the ones that were before him. But all of them know this. And all of them know that this is what will happen with the dollar. And you start looking at national debts and consumer debts. You know, we're approaching $23 trillion in national debt. All-time record highs on consumer, you know, credit card debt, auto loan debt, student loan debt. And, you know, most people don't realize, you know, that none of that stuff existed before 1971. You had some mortgage debt, and you had, you know, a little bit of auto, you know, the biggest car loan you could get in 1971 was 24 months. And some of you may be asking, why is he talking about 1971? Because that is officially when the United States went to a fiat currency. In 1933, they took the gold from the citizens, but foreign governments, in order to keep buying our debt, they were allowed to exchange that for gold. And by 1971, we were going to run out of gold. Nixon closed the gold window, and now we are a full fiat currency. And I know that's kind of hard. I'm jumping all around here, but we're trying to cover as much ground as we can. And ever since then, you know, the national debt in 1971 was $400 billion. And most people, now we got, you know, like I said, $23 trillion. And all of that on the backs of the Federal Reserve. Credit cards, no one even had a credit card in 1971. They didn't exist. And student loan debt didn't exist. And now you sit there and you think about today, all the debt that exists in the world, including, you know, Wall Street. Most people don't associate it this way, but Wall Street is a debt market. When you have a 401k or you're buying your stocks, or maybe you have an annuity or an IRA, whatever it may be, those are all debt instruments. You're actually loaning money to the company that whose stock you're buying, or to the fund that you're in, or whatever it may be. All of those are debt instruments. And all of that debt throughout history, every time a nation, and lots of them have done it, goes to a fiat currency, it always ends up at the exact same place, which is zero. So,
Joe, and speaking of Speaking of debt, there's one thing that you informed me of that blew my mind. Describe when you put money in a bank, describe that relationship and how that law changed recently. Because this blew my mind. I always thought you put money in a bank, well, of course they're going to give it back to you. They have to. It's your money. Describe this because people need to hear this.
Yeah, that's actually not the law. So think about it this way. The last time you opened a bank account, and you walked into the bank and you're like, hey, I want to buy an account. And they're like, oh, okay, well, great. Let's set it up account. And they take your name, your address, and maybe you've got a check or whatever it may be to open the account with. And then they start doing the, you know, you got the little pad in front of you, the electronic pad, like the credit card machine. And they tell you, initial here, sign here, click OK. Hit accept, initial here, sign there, hit accept. What you're actually doing, you're doing a number of things. First and foremost, most people did not know that, and this, believe it or not, what I'm going to tell you now has been law for longer than the United States has been a country. When you deposit your money into your bank, you know, and let's face it, today, most of us don't even do that, right? It's directly deposited into your bank. At that point, the money is no longer yours. What you're doing when your money gets deposited into the bank is you're telling the bank, I'm loaning you my money. And you become an unsecured creditor to the bank. In other words, the money that's in there no longer belongs to you. It actually belongs to the institution that you made the deposit with. And that's actually been law since like the 1400s. I want to say, I think it was 1452, but don't quote me on the exact year. It was actually established in England. And that law has been in place and is recognized throughout the world. That is banking law. And has been banking law, like I said, for a lot longer than the United States has even been around. And of course, they don't tell you that, right? Because if they told you that, you'd be like, well, wait a minute. What do you mean it's not mine? You know? And that's why, you know, there's things like they say there's FDIC insurance, right? Hey, we guarantee up to $250,000. They created that after the Great Depression when they closed all the banks. It wanted to give the illusion that your money is safe.
So Joe, I'm going to stop you right there. Sure. because we have to take a quick break. But that right there, what you just explained, I knew part of that. I knew FDIC. I want to talk about, let me just stop there. Stop going off on my weird brain tangent here. How ridiculously ineffective FDIC rules are. So don't go away, everyone. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and we're going to hear some more fascinating, cool stuff from Joe Jaquin.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, Prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured, rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT-100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required, and no test is needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always ready, always charged grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60 amp hour internal battery, the operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our two-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up.
Hi everyone, Glenn Tate here.
And Shelby Gallagher here. People always ask us whether a particular property would be good for prepping.
Well, luckily there's someone who does this for a living, and that's Brian at Strategic Landscape Design. He's a bug out location consultant for a new property or the one you already have.
Strategic Landscape Design shows you how to make your property productive for you now and when the collapse comes. Visit strategiclandscapedesign.com and see all the things Brian can do for you and your property. That's strategiclandscapedesign.com.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. Shelby Gallagher here with our great guest today, Joe Jaquint, I don't know about you, Glenn, I'm just sitting here listening and learning. I hope our listeners are too. So, Joe, we were just talking about how when we put our money in a bank, it's not our money anymore. And all the little disclosures that we sign and all that fine print that we get we don't take the time to read through, nor if we did, would we really truly understand. And you've just said what it does. So, and we were starting to talk about FDIC. I already knew that FDIC rules and laws and all that were a complete joke, but I just want you to take off from there and keep telling the story, essentially.
Well, so when you think about the FDIC and it got created, it was another creation from the Great Depression. I think most people remember or were at least taught in history about the Great Depression. There was a banking holiday. That's what they called it. And every bank in the country was shut. And they shut them essentially for an entire week. And when the banks all reopened, What the government had done is they essentially took all the managers of the bank and made them temporary IRS agents, if you will. And everybody that came in, when the bank reopened, everyone had to turn their gold in. And every safety deposit box had to be opened in the presence of these new temporary IRS employees, and any gold that was in there was going to be repatriated back to the government, and everybody that was a citizen of the United States was now going to start using Federal Reserve notes only. In other words, you couldn't take a $5 gold piece or a $10 gold piece and go to the hardware store and buy a plow or buy a gallon of milk. Using gold was now banned. And matter of fact, not only was it banned, most people don't know this either. You weren't allowed to own gold in this country until 1971. So from 1933 to 1971, it was actually illegal to own it. And they did that because they worried that if they didn't ban gold, the citizenry would be like, hey, no, we don't want to use this paper. And they wouldn't put their money into the bank. And the other thing they worried about, obviously, as the banks had been closed for a week, and I won't go into all the details, thousands and thousands of banks, almost somewhere close to half the banks in the country, never reopened. So they're like, okay, these people are going to be skittish. What can we do? And they came up with the FDIC insurance that said, hey, if you put your money in the bank and the bank goes under, we're going to guarantee. Now, the guarantee today is at $250,000. So I will say this to any of your listeners out there. If you have a bank account and you have more than $250,000 in a single bank, you need to stay under that $250,000. If you have over that, you need to go to another bank, not another branch, but another bank, open an account, always stay under the $250,000. But I'm going to tell you why, you know, that's nice, but it actually probably won't help you. There used to be laws, and I'll try to go quickly here, that the government prevented banks from being big. In other words, back in 1971, J.P. Morgan Chase could not have banks in every state. Right? They could only, hey, you can be in the East, or you can be in the Midwest, or you can be in the West. The biggest a bank could be was a regional bank. That was as big as you could be. And they did that partly because they knew, hey, the FDIC only has $20 billion in it. And by the way, the banks get charged a small fee. The banks self-fund, if you will, the FDIC insurance fund. But there's only about $20 billion in it. Well, as we've gotten through this, as this debt problem that I keep talking about grew, the Federal Reserve knew the banks had to grow with it. And so now you have what we call the mega banks, the five biggest banks. And we all know who they are, you know, J.P. Morgan, Citi, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, right? All the big boys. They all now have trillions of dollars of deposits. And I just told you the FDIC has about $20 billion worth of money. So the actual reality is if any of these banks actually goes under, there's no money there for you to get it back. And I talked about when you make those deposits, you're an unsecured creditor now. Well, one of the things that they made sure to do, because they always take care of themselves first, you are not first in line. When a company goes bankrupt, let's use Sears, because everyone knows that they've gone through bankruptcy a bunch of times. There's a pecking order of who gets paid first and who gets paid last. And, of course, the people that get paid last, they don't get paid at all, because all the money's already gone. And so what happens with the banking laws is you are dead last. So the depositor would be the very last person paid. So when the financial crisis happened, they realized, oh, no, we don't have enough money. We got to bail out these banks, because if we allow one of these big banks to go under, people are going to realize we don't have any money on the $250,000 really we want to pretend that we can do it, but we actually don't have the money to do it. So we can't allow for that to happen. And what they've done is they've been slowly changing these laws when it comes to banking. And what most people don't know, and this is the part where they don't want you to be educated, it doesn't happen in Congress. There's no vote, right? There's no debate. And you're not going to get Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Mitch McConnell and whoever else may be out on TV talking about it. That's not how it gets done. Banking laws are done through the SEC, and they're done in private. And most people don't even know when the laws change. And what they do is, you know, that bank statement you get every month. And most of us now don't even get it in the mail, right? We get it electronically. They put on the back of one of the pages in super small print that, let's face it, most of us never, ever read it. If you've ever read it once, you're probably ahead of the game. But most of us don't even know. Almost every year, some of that language changes, and you don't even realize that it's changed. And so what they've done is they set up a new system where You know, everyone got upset that they bailed out the banks, right? Remember that? Everybody was mad and said, hey, that's not right. They acted poorly. They were bad actors. We should have let them go under. And we probably would have been much better off today if we had took our medicine back then. So they created Dodd-Frank was the law and too big to fail. That's how they positioned it. Yes, we passed these new laws for these too big to fail banks, and we made it super safe for all of you. And that was what they wanted you to believe. But think about it logically. If something is too big, what is the solution to the problem? So think about it. It's too big, won't fit through the door, it's too big, what do I got to do? And the answer is very simple. I've got to make them smaller. Right? That's the answer to when anything is too big, you make it smaller. What they actually did was made them much bigger. And of course, there's a reason why they had to do it that way, because, again, we talked about that big, huge national debt number and what happens to fiat money. But at the same time, while making these banks bigger, they also took away a lot of what you're, you know, remember, go back to initial here, hit accept, sign here, hit accept. They took away a lot more of your security. So number one, they set up a law that says, okay, if these too big to fail banks go under, we obviously don't have the money. So what we will do is we'll go into these banks and we'll give, you know, they'll come up with a formula. Okay, we've got $20 billion, and let's just say this bank's got $1 trillion worth of deposits. We're going to give everybody, you know, 1/20th of the up to 250,000 of what they had in there. So, you know, as an example, hey, you got $1,000 or 10,000, you got $10,000 in your bank account. They're going to give you 500, but they're going to feel bad about it. I want you to know that they're going to feel bad and say, you know what? The other $9,500 that we owe you, we're going to give you shares in this new bank. Now, you can't sell them, and you can't, you know, turn it into actual money, but we're going to give you these shares, and maybe 10 years from now, you'll be able to sell those shares if the bank, you know, this new bank can actually do well. And maybe down the line sometime, you can get your money back.
And Joe, we've all heard the term bailouts, where the government puts money into the bank. What you're describing is a bail-in. And when I first heard you use that term, the bail-ins, were basically all of us that have money in banks. And of course, the big goal here with having some gold and silver is to not have all your money in the banks. That's why we're tearing apart the banks right now and describing why they're not a safe place, is because the idea is to have some gold and silver not in a bank, but bail-ins. And I thought, you guys are crazy. You guys have invented this new term. And then what did we see in Greece and Cyprus? Bail-ins. Exactly what you're describing. People didn't get their money back. They got these bogus shares, and they were basically, the money they put into the banks were being taken by the banks. And the people had to bail in the banks. The government wasn't going to bail out the banks, because they did that in 2008 and 2009. Everybody got mad. And now it's bailing in, where we all just have to let the banks absorb all the money that we have, most of the money that we have in the banks. And that's why you don't want all your money in a bank. Is that a good summary?
That's a really good summary. And I want everyone to know, listen, you have to have a bank account. Especially today, you know, you may have been able to get away without a bank account 40 years ago, but today it's virtually impossible. You have to have it. And I don't want you to, you know, I don't want you to be scared. I want you to be prepared. And that's why I tell everybody, you always got to have some of that, you know, if you're one of those people. And of course, even today, the other cruel twist to all of this is, before, when you had excess cash, in the bank. You know, it was called savings accounts, right? Remember those? Now everyone, I got a checking account. Hardly anybody's got a savings account. And if they do, they don't have very much in it. But they used to actually pay you interest, because that was actually kind of the agreement. Hey, you're giving up the rights to your money by depositing it with us. And as a thank you for doing that, the banks would pay you interest. And for most of a lot of people listening today, for most of your adult life up until the last 10 years, you know, you're getting 5, 6, 7% interest on your savings. It was a good trade, right? Hey, it made sense to leave excess money in your bank account because you're like, hey, I'd get 7% on it. Of course, we all know today you don't get anything.
Yeah, right? 0.007.
The banks aren't paying you anything. And so it just makes good sense for those of you out there that have those excess reserves, take some of that and put it into some gold, put it into some silver, and keep it where only you know where it's at. And you brought up Greece and Cyprus. Those were two great examples. Those were tests. These were tests. They're smaller countries. Their banks weren't big enough to cause a global crisis. And so they were wanting to test how we could make this all work. And they ended up with a, like in Cyprus's case, you got about 60% of your money there. Greece was very torturous. You know, in Greece for several years, you weren't able to go to an ATM and withdraw more than $20. They actually put limits on how much cash you could have. You couldn't close your bank account. You if you went into your bank and you said to them, I would like to make a withdrawal. The teller would say, okay, how much would you like?
And of course, here's $20. The,
right. Well, then if you came up with any number higher than $20, the answer was no, sorry. And then you're like, well, now you're mad. But it's my money. See, it's not your money. And really, Greece is a great example of proving my point when I first told you about what the real laws are about banking. You don't own that money. And the people of Greece, learn that. They don't own that money. And the government decided how much of that money you could have. And in the instance of Greece, it was $20.
So let me just throw this out there, using the example of $20. I think about, because I have teenage sons. Tell you what, when they do work for me, mowing lawns or whatever, and I don't pay them their $20, the resistance that I get, the that's not fair that I get, it's pretty loud and opinionated. So imagine those, I just think about the millennial generation that is just used to putting a card in a machine and getting their $200, their $300, their money, and just being able to have this bank account and be able to place an order on their Groupon or order their food or whatever. This will be a harsh reality. It will be part of our collapse. And this is on a small scale. Go ahead.
And Shelby, you take a couple teenagers who were good kids. Well, and then you multiply that by 300 million people in this country who can't get their money out, and stuff's going to get spicy. It's going to get loud, as in gunfire. I mean, people are going to lose their minds. Well, we need to wrap up in total, but there are a couple more points that need to be made. You, Joe, talk about don't put all your eggs in the gold and silver basket. Shelby has a great example of that she should tell folks about.
Well, really quick, and feel free to talk about this, because I know, Joe, this is something that you've experienced many times. Back in 2009, I knew a business owner in Portland when I lived in Portland. Very successful business, incredibly successful. It was a landscaping sort of business. Saw the collapse coming, and we all felt it in 2009, sold his very lucrative business and put it all into gold and silver. I remember thinking at the time, and I was no expert on gold and silver then, nor am I now, but I remember thinking, why would you sell an asset and move it over and do all one gold and silver? And I know, you know, you're going to talk about that. What I would have seen for me, it's like, this business is still an asset. Let's diversify and certainly include gold and silver in that. But you have a money-making asset here that's making you money. Anyway, so I'm going to let you go with that because I know that you've seen that happen hundreds of times. What are your thoughts
on
that?
Way too many times, Shelby. And it's something we really talk about on a weekly basis, at least every single week. You know, I do a show 5 days a week. Every week I say it at least once. Don't put all of your eggs into any one basket. Here's what happens. Fear. Fear takes over. And whether it's because I don't like who the president is, or I don't like, you know, I don't like what happened, the housing collapse, or, you know, I saw my neighbors and my friends, and maybe it was your brother or your sister, or maybe it was you and you lost everything, right? Fear makes people do dumb things. The best thing I can tell everybody is the people that really prepare the best do it consistently. That's the key to anything. You know, it's kind of the same thing that people in the stock market always say, well, you know, you just keep putting it in there, right? You know, you just keep putting it in there. The same thing goes with gold and silver. You need to just constantly be accumulating it over time. And that's really the best advice I can give anybody. You know, don't go and sell all your stuff. I'm going to sell my house, sell my business because I'm afraid, and I'm going to just all go and buy gold. That's not a good strategy. The best thing that I can tell you is to just start preparing. And, you know, as this cycle, you know, we've started into this debt super cycle now where, you know, right now they'll tell you, hey, the debt's going to be $1 trillion this year, right? The national debt is going to increase by $1 trillion. That's actually not true. It actually is going to increase about $1.7 trillion. They just don't like to count it all, right? And there, I don't have enough time in this show to tell you all about it, but over the next 10 years, we're going to see a national debt that's approaching $23 trillion. We're going to be talking about a number above $40 trillion. So this thing's getting massive now.
And Joe, if you don't mind me interrupting you, you mentioned we're kind of running out of time. We have about 4 more minutes. I wanted to cover a couple things that are specific, practical things that preppers need to think about. We're going to talk more about all this in the after show that's available to Patreon supporters. But one point you've made is that, and you called it wealth insurance earlier, and I want to emphasize this to people. You know, you don't buy gold and silver to make money. I mean, if gold and silver prices go way up and it's still peacetime and you want to sell it, okay, that's cool. But it's to lock in today's value. $10,000 worth of stuff today you put into gold, and then the gold holds on to the value because it's not in a bank and it's not denominated in U.S. dollars. And so I want to make that point. The other thing is, you mentioned the consistency thing about consistently preparing. You have, and you're too much of a gentleman to talk about it, so I will. You have a great program called the Metals Program. And what it is, I believe the minimum is $50 a month. And I think that's right.
It's 100. Yeah,
100, okay.
100, yep.
So basically, you put in $100 a month, and then every quarter, and you, Joe, take that money and pool it and get really good deals. And then at the end of the quarter, you are mailed, you're physically delivered. Remember that thing about the goal, the IRS people going into the safe deposit boxes? You know how to prevent that? Is to not have it in a safe deposit box, to have it in your house. So every quarter you get stuff based on how much you put in that quarter. And it might be, you know, some silver coins, it might be some gold coins. And it is the perfect way to kind of fire and forget. You just sort of, you let your credit card get charged for 3 months, and then you get some stuff. You don't like it, you cancel it. It's the no thought way to do this, and you get cool stuff at a good price. And I'm kind of rushing through here, but I want to make a point about the different ways that metal comes, and you can give your opinion certainly, Joe, but here are my thoughts. I think there's five categories of precious metals out there. There's junk coins, which are, you know, circulated coins. They're not beautiful. They're a little bit nicked up, and they're, you know, silver dollars pre-63, 64 or something. And there's that, which is what I recommend, because you're not paying for like beautiful collector stuff. There's freshly minted silver, U.S. Silver Eagles every year. They come out, and I'm a huge fan of U.S. minted coins, because when there's a collapse and I need to get some gasoline, you know, I want to show up with a U.S. minted coin, because there's no way to counterfeit those things. There are also freshly minted foreign coins, like from Canada or the Marshall Islands or some crazy kooky country. And I'm sure that the gold or silver in there is legitimate, but I need to convince a motorcycle gang, you know, that that Canadian coin is legitimate in order to get some antibiotics for my kid. I don't want to have that conversation at that time. I want to have U.S. minted coins. Then there's bullion, you know, gold bars and stuff like that. And I just think, I mean, they come in different sizes, of course, but that's just a whole lot of gold and silver. And then there's collectibles, where it's kind of like collecting stamps. You know, it's like if it's rare, it's worth more. Would you agree or disagree that junk coins and freshly minted U.S. coins, of all those, are probably the best thing for preppers? And we have about 10 seconds. Sorry to do that to you, Joe.
That's okay. Yeah, absolutely. And I really love the junk silver pre-1965, dimes, quarters, half dollars, because of the cost as well. It's actually the cheapest way to buy government hallmark silver.
And I have to take us out, Joe. Very sorry. We ran out of time.
All right. Hey, I enjoyed it. Thank you so much. And I'll stick around for the after show.
Have a good week, everyone.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.